You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Madam President, I have an update for the information of all senators and for the information of the American people, and it's good news. It's good news for the doctors and nurses in emergency rooms around the country who are waiting for more masks and more funding. It's good news for families all across America. At last, we have a deal.
March the 25th, 2020. The words of Senator Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader. Shortly after midnight Eastern Time, we have a deal. Not quite. Cost estimated $2 trillion. And it could be more. It could be $4 trillion more, maybe $5 trillion more. This according to some of the economic advisors for the White House saying by the time you dump in some additional cash in the process, it could get more. But the package itself, in providing benefits and so forth, they do have a deal. Finally, they got rid of all this pie-in-the-sky green deal Nancy Pelosi was trying to shove it in. But Nancy Pelosi is not so sold on it yet. She's taken a very reserved and distant touch. I don't know if I want to touch it yet until I see it closer. Why, Nancy? You had no problem voting on Obamacare bill when you said, well, we won't really know what's in it until we vote on it. But the idea now is to get it to the Senate, and Congress is coming together even as I speak at this point. We could have this passed quickly through the Senate, be finished up, and then go into the House. They could, by unanimous vote, just accept it. I'm not holding my breath on that. Pelosi might want another chance to whip the far left into a frenzy and get some of her key things back into the bill somehow or another. Somehow or another, put it back inside. Listen, we have two key issues right now. Two key issues. Stop the spread of coronavirus. Two, reopen our nation. Currently, the coronavirus cases across the world at 440,000 reported, 20,000 deaths. About 25% of those cases reported as infected out of the 440,000, 112,000 have recovered by one means or the other. And in some cases, they're using what they found in France. In some cases, they're using the chloroquine and other combinations, which we're looking at. In the U.S., we've had 55,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus, and we've had 3,400 deaths. 3,400 deaths. That's not good, but in an average year of a flu or influenza, we could have 20,000 plus any year, and it just kind of goes unmentioned at that point. This is an entirely different issue. And partly because it came right out of China. It's the China virus. No, it has nothing to do with the fact it came out of China. The fact is that China was keeping information from us that could have given us a bigger, faster start. We got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours for you. The media continues to try to pit Dr. Fauci of the Infectious Disease Control Group against President Trump. Dr. Fauci says, just stop it. We're going to get his reaction coming up a little bit later. Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood retired with the Heritage Foundation on opening our nation in stages. I want to ask him, can we begin to do it in stages or what's the best thing? By the way, he has expert past history in dealing with infectious diseases that could be used as biochemical weapons. And Thomas Wellington, yes, one of my sponsors, Wellington Environmental. Some of the cases they've seen as they try to treat for coronavirus around the area, he's going to tell me about some of those, and he said he found some businesses making some big mistakes when they think they're getting rid of COVID-19. It's all for show. It's not going to be any effect for them or their clients. I've also decided coronavirus can not only make you sick, it can make you stupid. It can. You look at some of the things some folks are doing. Well, let's laugh a little bit. Let's find a little laugh. How about this? The guy sent me a Chinese virus and a German measles and a Spanish flu. A Chinese virus, a German measles, Spanish flu, walk into a bar. No bartender. He ran out. He didn't want to appear to be racist. How about social distancing? Parents initiated this long before the government did. Anytime their girls started dancing with boys, you keep your distance from that kid. And how's this for a question about social distancing? Someone's asking, how long is this going to last? My husband is still trying to get back into the house. What do I do? Continue the social distancing. We got a lot to cover on some serious issues as well. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has 30 years experience to make your company and environment safe. Wellington Environmental can give you peace of mind, and the cost is very reasonable. These days, you can't take a chance that customers, employees, your family would be exposed to COVID-19. You have to be proactive. That starts by calling Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You'll quickly see why customers have relied on Wellington Environmental for decades. COVID-19 can survive for hours on your furniture, your computers, your equipment, and every time someone touches that surface, they could be exposed. You don't want that liability. Call Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
It was 1989. My thoughts were short. My hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So getting this package done as we go into the red meat for the lion and the rest of us is what we want to tear into is this stimulus package. It's bulky. It's got a lot of money on it. It's got a lot of things that are good for Americans. It's got some pitfalls probably still in it. There's some traps here and there that maybe we need to be aware of and try to work out. But at the same time, the critical issue here, as I said a moment ago, is we've got to get money to businesses and employees who have lost their pay and their income, their revenue. As we have had to tell businesses, you need to close your doors. Our businesses made their own decision to do so because they didn't want their own employees. They couldn't keep employees. They weren't getting customers coming in the door. How are you going to make it up to them? And, of course, we're talking about the very biggest of the companies, such as airlines, cruise companies, right down to the mom-and-pop store down the street from you. Maybe they're still trying to stay open, but they just aren't getting anybody coming in because nobody wants to go out if they don't have to. And then you get some, as I said a moment ago, sometimes this coronavirus can not only make you sick, it can make you stupid. You want an example? Let me give you that before we get into some of the details of this stimulus package. Making you stupid instead of just making you sick. The L.A. County Sheriff is ordering the closure of gun stores. Now, we've been down this road before. What does that have to do with fighting coronavirus? To my knowledge, no one's taking a gun and shooting wildly at what they think is coming out that might be coronavirus. If they want guns for protection, fearing that, you know, if the situation is going to escalate, I want to be able to protect my home and my family. But the sheriff is saying, no, we're going to close them down because maybe they're attracting too much attention. But on top of that, the same L.A. County sheriff turning around and deciding we're going to release 1,700 inmates from our city jails. Why? Well, because we don't want them to possibly be exposed in the jail system. It makes no sense. And I guess they think they're going to go home and sit at home and play Nintendo or whatever else they might have on an Xbox and not go out after they've been in jail for several days or weeks or whatever. No, it's making people stupid. And, of course, most of the blame for being stupid gets laid at the feet of Donald Trump. He's an easy target for the left, and they continue to attack left and right constantly. But there's a new poll from Gallup that shows his approval rating for how he's handled the coronavirus right now is at 60%. 60%. And there's a large number of that. Let me get the details here on that. A large number of that is coming from independents as well when you begin to break it out. This is pretty interesting, folks, because we're going to get into this more in the next hour because I want you to keep in mind as the Democrats move toward the elections, once we get past some of this, I want to remind you what they've done to try to forestall everything. So the president on this Gallup poll showing 60% approval rating for how he's handling this. And when it came down to breaking them down by parties, 60% of independents favor his handling. 60% of independents. And when it comes to Democrats, 27% of the Democrats. The president says, I'd like to get the nation opened up by Easter. That's April 12th. Get the nation rolling again. Can that be possible? Or do we have, of course, the continuing argument and the media saying, well, you're disobeying medical advice and you don't know what you're talking about? We'll get to all that a little bit later. So here we have this $2 trillion stimulus package coming out of the Senate. As I said, they're meeting even as we speak right now. It includes $500 billion for a major corporate liquidity program through the Federal Reserve, $367 billion for a small business loan program. That's a big key to get small business back up. $100 billion for hospitals. $150 billion for state and local governments. It also will give a one-time check. Hear this. This is for you. A one-time check of $1,200 to Americans who make up to $75,000. I assume that's going to be based upon the 2018 tax report, because you don't have the 2019 filed yet. And in fact, if you recall, they've already decided to delay your April 15th deadline for 3 months, so you don't have to be ready for your taxes by April 15th. Individuals with no or little tax liability would receive the same amount. Unlike the GOP proposal, that would give them a minimum of $600. So the left just got the money in saying, well, we want everybody to get those kinds of checks. All of this capping days, at least 5 days of intense negotiations. And every day it stretched into the evening hours. So around 1:30 Central Time, I think it's actually 1:30 Eastern Time, McConnell came forward and saying, we have a deal, and the Senate will pass it later this day. That's why they're coming back together. Even Chuck Schumer said, this is the largest rescue package in American history. Far from perfect, but we believe it's been improved significantly to warrant its quick consideration and passage. And, of course, he was constantly being called up and whispered in his ear from Nancy Pelosi via phone because she had her own $2.5 trillion bill she introduced. And it was basically a gimme, gimme, gimme package. Gimme, gimme, gimme money for green funding. Gimme, gimme money also for solar funding. Gimme, gimme money for getting rid of student loans. They had nothing to do with the current crisis. None of it. Even to the extent, as we told you yesterday, she wanted to go back to providing the old free Obama phones, making provisions in there to provide phones for people. All of that is in her proposal. Now this is coming out of the Senate. It's going to go back to the House. And what is she going to do? Is she going to push it through? Well, right now she's been kind of indicating tepid endorsement. You know what tepid would mean? I'm not sure if I want to put my finger in that or not. It might be a little warm. It might be a little cold. This is how you get the lobsters in the pot, you know. You give them some, take them out of that cold water, put them some warm. Well, this feels pretty good. This feels pretty nice. It's getting a little warm in here. Yeah, but it feels good. Get a little warmer. It still feels pretty good. It's damn hot. We're done. Pelosi's still looking for a way to get her options into this package. She has the possibility to simply saying, all right, we accept it, and we'll vote on it in a unanimous process. But she's got some Democrats in her side of the wing, of course, that are still whining and crying, and the snowflakes are coming out, and they just say, well, we're not getting anything that's going to give us votes in the future, as opposed to saying, are we doing anything to help the American public? Numerous Democrat committee heads are meeting through this day and asking questions. House Democrat Caucus Chairman Hakeem Jeffries in New York said, our goal is, quote, to maximize member engagement and dissemination of information. In other words, we're going to sit around and BS until we get what we want out of it. That's what I gather. Democrats have been pushing on so many different things. I'm not sure they're going to get this through on a unanimous vote. If they don't do this, I'm going to remind you over and over again, as we get past this crisis and we get closer into the general election, I'm going to remind you who stalled things out. This should have been done 5 days ago. It should have been very simple. Come together, lay out the package of what we can do to help individuals and businesses. Let's get that done. Then we'll work on all the rest. Now, Republicans are not free of some of my complaints and concerns. I'm very worried that they don't make this a bailout for the airlines. This money is not to bail out airlines for their own financial mismanagement and other issues they've had going, nor for Boeing. Don't want to do that again. Because every dollar you give them, you do take from the American people. But the problem I have, and I've seen the left bang on this drum repeatedly, and they are making a message heard. The same thing I just said, that every dollar goes to the corporate people, don't go to the individuals. But that's not exactly correct, because if you sustain the corporations, the businesses, you keep them going, then they can keep hiring. Production lines stay open. The workers are employed. The delivery people are employed. Shipping is employed. All of this. That's how we built this entire economy, relying on each other. So if they're going to do a unanimous consent, can they do this thing? It would begin with one of the legislators stepping forward on the floor and saying, I ask for unanimous consent. Sometimes they just want to revise and extend their remarks. Sometimes grant someone else floor privileges. Congress has been conducting routine business using unanimous consent since the first Congress, 1789. But the first time it was actually believed to be utilized would be the spring of 1846, where they were debating the Oregon Treaty at that time. That's a long time away. You'd think we would have learned something by then. Well, at this point, Congress may or may not have been more civil than what it is now. We're going to continue watch while we're on the air here today to see if they can actually get this done in the Senate before we wrap up in the next 90 minutes, and then see how the House begins to do it. Because I'm afraid that Nancy, once she gets it back in the House, is going to start looking for ways to tear it apart. As I also pointed out in the beginning, while the actual package that they are voting on is $2 trillion, We had numerous financial experts, including in the White House, saying by the time you add Federal Reserve money and add more cash into our circulation, you could be looking at this costing something like another $4 trillion to $5 trillion to get the nation back on track, get us back up to speed. But, of course, you can't get out of the political arena. And especially when the left is looking for an opportunity to extort a crisis. I'm looking at a piece written by a former Obama speechwriter who wrote, referenced Donald Trump. This a-hole and his rich friends are too stupid to get that we can only get through this together. He says everyone's at risk from the virus. Everyone suffers when there aren't enough hospital beds. Everyone struggles when millions are too sick to work. Trump understands that. We understand that. We accept that. Doesn't make any difference to the left. They can continue to rant and rave and sell the same narrative. By the way, the White House officials weren't coming out there looking still for ways to make China help pay for some of this. So what do you know about the Spanish flu? You've heard it talked about from time to time. How bad was it? I'm going to take a break. We'll come back and give you a comparison of that. And also be joined before we wrap up this hour by Marine Lieutenant Colonel retired Dakota Wood on how do we get to the next step.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
In the next hour, I'm going to be joined by one of my sponsors, Tom Wellington of Wellington Environmental. This is what they do. They deal with companies, hospitals, universities, if they have an infectious outbreak of some type, how to sanitize, remediate, and other issues as well. And he's already had some interesting stories he shared with me about cases they found around the area and what companies think they're doing that will make things better, and they're not. And in fact, one company was using something no more than a chemical you'd use to get rid of urine smell, thinking that was going to clean their environment. You want to hear from Tom Wellington. That's coming up in the next hour. The Spanish flu. Now, here's an interesting thing. We continue to say, as the president has, the current flu we're dealing with is the coronavirus, and we often call it the China flu because it did originate in Wuhan, China. China. And, of course, we kind of mock it and say, I mean, you name it for where it came from, such as the Spanish flu. Well, not so fast there. The Spanish flu might be misnamed. It was known as a 1918 flu epidemic. It was basically from January 1918 to December 20, it infected 500 million, 25% of our world population at that time. Death toll, pretty hard to pin down, but they're saying anywhere from 17 million to 50 million, maybe 100 million. As you're in World War I, and censors started minimizing reports of the illness and mortality in Germany, United Kingdom, France, and the U.S., because they didn't want it to appear that any of their troops might be at risk. And then when the King Alfonso of Spain got very sick from it, well, then the stories began to gyrate and kind of call it the Spanish flu. Now, apparently, historical and epidemiological data had not been able to verify exactly where it did originate. There are even reports that it might have started in the U.S. Some of the major staging situations did happen in France, where the United Kingdom troops were staging at a hospital camp area. They had food sources coming in. Obviously, at that time in the early 1900s, we did not have proper sanitation. Food was butchered and served, kind of like in a wet market like you have happening right now in China on a daily basis. And, of course, if someone got sick and they began to sneeze and everything, well, then they quickly spread particles to those nearby. And ironically, in the midst of all of this, when we talk about how it wasn't really the Spanish flu, possibly, one of the regions of the world apparently less affected by the Spanish flu or the 1918 flu pandemic was China. China. Ironic. So that's a brief synopsis of the Spanish flu. And, of course, that, by the way, was the first of two pandemics caused by what we now identify as the H1N1 influenza virus. The second was the swine flu we saw in 2009. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood joining us coming up.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
You have alarms to let you know if someone breaks into your home. But what tells you if your home is invaded by something other than burglars? What if your home is invaded by creatures with six legs, eight legs, or more, or none? Rodner Pest Solutions can keep pests like these out of your house and get rid of any that might already be inside. In fact, you can get a free, no-obligation inspection, an estimate to protect your home anytime. Did I mention free? Go online to Rodner.com. Rodner.com, schedule your free inspection today. Rodner, the largest family-owned pest control business in Missouri with 10 locations, more than 200 team members. Plus, Rodner has a money-back guarantee. If you're not happy for any reason, they make it right or you get your money back. I first called Rodner more than 40 years ago. I know they'll take care of you. Contact them, Rodner.com. Rodner.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Yes, a reminder, you can text comments to me during the program. You need to do it on my radio page, Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. If you don't go to that page, I don't see it more than likely. Although I do have one I've seen on the other page. I'll get to it in a moment, try to bring it up as we have our guest coming aboard. Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, retired, now with the Heritage Foundation. Welcome aboard. Semper Fi, sir.
Hey, thank you very much, Ernie. Good to talk to you, as always.
Well, of course, folks, Dakota is with the Heritage Foundation, and they're doing a great job right now putting information out. They have a website, which we'll promote here for a moment. We'll also put it up on this podcast, again, for you to go to get facts and details about coronavirus. Colonel Wood, I want to ask you about, though, a piece that you wrote dealing with when we began to come up with, looking back through history, I found it pretty fascinating, the idea of containing or social distancing, as we're now calling it.
Right, yeah. So it's on a spectrum. You know, you can just avoid contact with other people. You can go more extreme, or you're starting to really contain, groups to figure out what's going on. And then at the most extreme, if you know somebody is infected, you can physically isolate them, because you know exactly what you're dealing with. And so what we're seeing in government policies from local to national, and not just our country but other countries, are different variations on this. You keep from getting infected or infecting others by limiting the transmission vectors. Do you touch something? Do you cough on somebody? You know, is it bodily fluids? I mean, different diseases have different sorts of ways of being communicated. And so that's the sort of policies we're seeing put into place.
And, you know, to that extent, you go back in history, you talk about the book of Leviticus, pointing out how lepers were separated because they were seen to be, maybe don't get near them, but we didn't understand medical science, sniffling, sneezing, and so forth. But you even looked at what happened during the Peloponnesian War of the 5th century. They were social distancing then.
Yeah, fifth century BC. So,
BC,
The city of Athens was affected by a plague that was thought to come up through its network down to the sea. So, you know, this river or Mediterranean Sea trade, somehow or other, disease was introduced into the city, and it just wiped out a huge part of the population. So, people have known for millennia, not just centuries, but thousands of years, that when you've got a diseased thing, whether it's a cow or a person, it's probably a bad idea to come into close contact with it. And so there is this reaction to want to stay away. And so that's a protective measure that's kind of built into us, a recognition that there's a threat. And then people have also tried to weaponize that, you know, the idea of biological warfare. You know, if I can hurt my opponent by using some kind of a disease thing, in some eras of warfare, that was seen as a weapon to be used. But all of that really blends into this idea of quarantining or keeping things away from us that could do us harm. So, you know, the idea of ships being tied at anchor for 40 days. That 40 is where we get from the Italian, where we get the word quarantine. And so it's a common thing throughout history, a little unusual, you know, to us today in the 21st century, but this certainly has historical precedent.
Yeah, and nowadays trying to do it, isolation and so forth, and when you're asking people to do it on their own, and then what kind of orders you can impose. Stanley wrote in on one of my Facebook accounts saying, I have a suggestion, whether it's going to work or not, don't know. With over over the half the cases of infection in the state of New York, why don't they shut down the airports in and out of New York and use the National Guard to cut off the city? What's the chance?
Well, this kind of layered thing. You know, we've seen extreme isolation in its truest form in the city of Wuhan in China, where the government ordered everybody in the city, you cannot leave your apartment. And, you know, police and military were patrolling the streets in order to effect, you know, this most extreme form. And if the incubation period for the virus is up to 2 weeks, then if you did a start today, you would need to wait that 2 weeks in isolation to see if anybody presents symptoms. And those that do, now you know precisely who to treat. But that 2 or 3 week period of time, that means no economic activity. You know, how do you get to the store and get food? How do you seek medical care? So all these questions. You can do this layered approach, and let's say we just isolate New York City, but in the weeks leading up to that, people have left the city to go to other parts of the country. You know, you see a bit of a tussle now between the state of Florida and the state of New York.
Staying isolated for 2 weeks after you get here, right?
Right, right. And so there is this disruption. That's why President Trump is talking about, look, we can't just shut down the country because of the economic consequences of that. And yet on the other side of that argument is that if we don't shut the thing down, then aren't we just prolonging the problem? And there's no clear answer there.
So,
you know, we
and
need more.
Go ahead. To that point, how do we begin to restart? Do we restart in stages, rural areas, and try to keep the urban areas more confined? I mean, does that make sense? Could it be done?
Right. Well, it absolutely can be done. And you know, we're going to use an extreme example of global war, like World War II. You know, Europe was absolutely devastated. Millions of people dead, cities destroyed. And yet out of that rubble, you know, survivors come and you rebuild and there's this huge economic boom. You know, I mean, we're not looking at those kinds of consequences. But the idea that the United States is going to be dealing with work stoppages for years is just nonsense. You know, that the most extreme projections are a year to 18 months to try to contain and really understand and develop and distribute a vaccine, you know, that it's a long kind of road up. That's at the most extreme end.
And
but, you know, people are out of jobs today, but 2 months from now, I think there will be an explosion of spending as people go back out to restaurants, they start to travel, right. You know, this pent-up demand. So we will recover from this, absolutely.
And without getting directly into politics, you think the stimulus sure. packages they're looking at it right now is it will help meet the need to bridge the gap?
Well, I mean, if you went purely analytical, it's questionable, you know, you get into the actual data. But the purely analytical approach does not account for people, human behavior, emotions, needs. You know, there's a psychological component to this. So if the markets and the average consumer and citizen feels that there is some kind of relief coming to them, boy, that buoys the spirit, right? It keeps people from getting all dismayed, you know, and distraught. In a mathematical sense, will it happen? Well, you know, $3,000 per family up to a certain, dollar limit for annual salary. How do they spend that $3,000? Is it savings or do you do an online purchasing of antiseptic? You know, so it's really no way to really gauge how people will use that stimulus money. But it is helpful in a psychological standpoint and in mitigating, you know, the problems of being out of work.
Just last night, U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo said the Chinese Communist Party is willfully denying the world vital information. Not that they violated, didn't give us information earlier, but even now continue to give us information we need to save lives, and they're putting lives at risk.
I don't think you can trust the Chinese. I mean, all the test kits that they sent to the Czech Republic, for example, it turns out that 80% of them are faulty, right? So this offers of assistance, you know, just aren't credible. I think they're still withholding information about what's going on in the country. And what we see is authoritarian regimes like in Beijing and Tehran, Iran, and North Korea. I mean, North Korea is saying they don't have any cases at all.
I mean, who believes that? Yeah, right.
So this need to hold on to power, and that the idea that any cracks or any demonstration that they have a problem is a threat to the stability of the regime. And that's why, you know, freedom, democracy, representative republics are so good at addressing the needs of the people. And these authoritarian repressive regimes are just antithetical to that and are really harmful.
To that point, the White House officials are talking about how we can make China pay for what we're spending. Any way that can be done?
Well, I think they're going to suffer a natural consequence, you know, diversification of the supplier base, you know, where the United States and other countries were almost totally dependent on China for certain types of manufactured products, where they provided a lot of the base ingredients for pharmaceutical supplies. We are finding out now that that is dangerous to be so dependent on another country for a single source of something, and especially if that country doesn't necessarily play by the rules,
but can
you know,
we
their
make
form
them,
of government.
Can we make them pay for a lot of the money we're spending on this?
Yeah, well, I think they're going to lose. I think companies are going to leave. So long term, there'll be a consequence. I don't think that we can really impose a cost, like take them to some international court or right. you know suing them for trillions of dollars. I just don't think that that would work. But I think that they're going to get their comeuppance, and they will see a massive loss in foreign direct investment, of manufacturing and partnering opportunities, and they're going to be dealing with this for decades.
All right. Lieutenant Colonel, as always, we appreciate your time, sir.
All right. Wash your hands.
You bet. Absolutely. Repeatedly.
That's right.
I'll just give you a salute. How's that?
That's great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Semper Fi. Dakota Wood for the Heritage Foundation. Here's their website, heritage.org/corona, if you want details on what they have pulled together on the coronavirus. Heritage.org/corona, coronavirus, that is. And we'll put it up on our Facebook when we post this. We'll take a break, and when we come back, despite the president's best efforts, he continues to be sniped at by the liberal media. And, of course, the best thing they think they can do now is make him look stupid compared to the head of the infectious disease control. Well, the doctor in charge of infectious disease control has an answer for the media. Stand by, please.
Keep on warring. This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So President Trump has said he would like, his wish is, packed churches on Easter Sunday to open up the nation by Easter Sunday. That's April 12th. Not that far away. He said, I'd love to aim it right at Easter Sunday so we're open for church services on Easter Sunday. That would be a beautiful thing. Packed churches all over this country. This last Sunday, a lot of churches did not have packed churches because folks are fearing of being overexposed and trying to maintain some personal distance. And if they went in and saw the church was crowded, obviously in many cases they weren't anyway, but they'd turn around and maybe go back, not go in. Do a Bible study at home or whatever they chose, or a smaller group. And churches are doing the best they can as well, and to that extent. But the very fact that the president said this, immediately he come reporters questioning, how can you come up with that kind of data? How can you think you're gonna insist they open by Easter Sunday? You're going to put everybody back to work? You're going to open up the nation despite what the medical experts are saying? Well, they haven't said no to that. They haven't said yes. Dr. Fauci, the guy that has become the face of the infectious disease control group, says just consider what the president's suggesting and what his wish is. That's what we're just look at it in that light, please.
The president clearly listens. I mean, he has this aspirational goal of hoping that we might be able to do it by a certain date. We talked to him about that. We say we need to be flexible. He realizes that and he accepts that. I mean, he doesn't want to give up his aspirational goal, but he's flexible enough to say, okay, let's look at it on a day-by-day basis. We say and we will give him data to inform the decision. The more we learn about what's out there, particularly in areas of the country that don't have the big spikes like New York, and we talk about it. We talk about what that would do to inform our decision. But he's been very flexible about it. Even though it looks like he's made this absolute decision on something, he does have an open mind about it.
But that's not the way the media wants to paint it. And that's why every time he does something like that, I had some friends, and they would see him on TV and say, what an idiot. Get him off the stage. Bring the adults. Why don't they just let the doctors talk? He doesn't know anything. And yet when Andrew Cuomo in New York gets up and makes some remarks about trying to open up his city, it's high praise. Now, Cuomo the other day was praising Trump. Praising Trump, saying you're doing a good job and he's going to be supporting us. But the media doesn't want to talk about how you can find some commonality with Trump. They want to find diversiveness. They want to find divisiveness. And that's why they continue in their best efforts to pit Dr. Fauci against President Trump. Now, Dr. Fauci was appearing on a program, WMAL Morning on the Mall, the other day, and he made it very clear. You reporters, he's not saying this, I am. You're getting out of line and you're only trying to create trouble. You're not solving anything. That's the way I would say it. He took a little more subtle, nicer approach.
That is really unfortunate. I would wish that would stop, because we have a much bigger problem here than trying to point out differences. They're really fundamentally at the core. When you look at things, there are not differences. The president has listened to what I have said and what the other people on the task force have said. When I've made recommendations, he's taken them. He's never countered or overridden me. The idea of just pitting one against the other is just not helpful. I wish that would stop and we'd look ahead at the challenge we have to pull together to get over this thing.
That's well stated. I wish the media would stop trying to pit me against President Trump. And as he said, and I'll repeat for you again, the president has not overridden me on anything. And we need to stop this. He's never countered or overridden me. We need to now look ahead at the challenge and pull together. Not for the mainstream media. The mainstream media has got to find what they can to tear him apart. If President Trump got up and made this statement, what do you think would happen? If he said, this pandemic is going to kill 50% of our nation's population, well, obviously it would be wrong. And it would be a misstatement of facts, and maybe it'd just be, you know, a slip of the tongue, didn't mean it that way, meant it would infect 50% of the population. You think they would give him a pass? Oh, no. So riddle me this. A major network, cable network, MSNBC, puts up on one of their tweets, if a pandemic rages across the country, it will kill 50% of our population. They just flat put it up. Oh, we made a mistake. We didn't mean that. We meant it would infect 50% of the population. There's a hell of a big difference between infecting 320 million and killing 320 million. And I accept the fact it's a mistake, but the mainstream media, if you're a Trump supporter, if you're on that side of the fence, you're not allowed to make a mistake. We'll take a break when we come back. As I said, in the next hour, I certainly want you listening when Tom Wellington, one of my sponsors, appears, because this is what they do. They go in and remediate situations like this. They deal and have dealt with viruses of different types for decades. This is a new virus, but they still know what works and how to attack it and make your environment safe. That's coming up in the next hour.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.